This is Pop Culture Manchild and PCMC. I'm your host, Mike Bongiorno. I'm here once again with Nadia Kader. Nadia, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm very excited.
So Halloween's over. I hope you guys had a spooky fun time. We're back to sort of normal episodes, and we've got some news to talk about. Nadia, you ready for some news?
Lay it on me.
Okay. So Martin Scorsese recently said he really fucking trash talked Marvel movies. And I want to read you the quote because it upset some people. Some people agreed with him. Okay, so this is what Martin Scorsese said about Marvel movies. Quote, "I don't see them. I tried, you know, but that's not cinema. Honestly, the closest I can think of them, as well made as they are, with actors doing the best they can under the circumstances, is theme park rides. It isn't the cinema of human beings trying to convey emotional, psychological experiences to another human being." And then Francis Ford Coppola, who's friends with him, said, "When Martin Scorsese says that the Marvel pictures are not cinema, he's right, because we expect to learn something from cinema. We expect to gain something, some enlightenment, some knowledge, some inspiration. Martin was kind when he said it's not cinema. He didn't say it's despicable, which I just say it is."
Pedro Almodovar actually also chimed in. What
did he say?
He said that Marvel movies aren't sexy.
Yeah, okay.
Like, they don't convey, like, sex in, like, the way cinema does.
What a weird non sequitur in this whole conversation. It's like someone...
Well, he's, like, chiming in. It's like all the old directors are kind of saying. So he's like,
but
oh, it's
I feel
my
like
turn.
He's talking about something entirely different.
Yeah, he
does. Like, imagine you're on a bus, and then some guy's like, "I feel like it's just not sexy enough in here." And it's like, what? This is not what we were talking about.
I mean, if you make the stretch, he's making the argument that it doesn't convey something. Like, Marvel movies do not convey something of humanity, which what part of it is sexuality. And Marvel movies are very, like...
They aren't very sexual. You're right.
Yeah.
James Gunn, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy, he said on Twitter, "Martin Scorsese is one of my five favorite living filmmakers. I was outraged when people picketed The Last Temptation of Christ without having seen the film. I'm saddened that he's now judging my films the same way. That said, I will always love Scorsese, be grateful for his contribution to cinema, and can't wait to see The Irishman." Robert Downey Jr. was on the Howard Stern show, and he was asked about it. And he said something, and he just had a pithy answer, because he said, "What do you say to Martin Scorsese?" He says, "It's not cinema." And Robert Downey Jr. is like, "Well, it plays in movie theaters." Here's my take. I think I get what Scorsese is trying to say, but I also think he's entirely fucking wrong. Because, and he should, and here's what pisses me off. He should know better, because Scorsese knows his history. He even made a film about Georges Méliès, Hugo. So he should know that escapist cinema is not new. Movies that are there to show us fantastical things, that are there to show us, you know, outer space, to take us away from the mundane of living in our culture, they have been there from the very beginning, okay? What the film scholar Tom Gunning calls the cinema of attractions. That's how movies started. The very beginning of movies were these little, you know, 10-second, 15-second little marvels, whether it was what the Lumiere brothers were doing in France or what the Edison company was doing here in the East Coast or the Biograph company. You know, you look at things like Méliès films, like A Trip to the Moon, right, which is arguably like that's from 1903. And it's also a big part of Martin Scorsese's Hugo, right? That if you've never seen it, in Hugo, you've got Ben Kingsley playing Méliès. And it's all about A Trip to the Moon. And it's like, Scorsese, you should know better. You should know that, in fact, the way that you're defining cinema, which is a very narrow, pretentious way, is that's the aberration. Movies that are thoughtful and intellectual and sophisticated, those historically are not what movies are. Now, I want movies to be smart and sophisticated, but I also would never say that's what they must be. That's what annoys me about this whole thing.
Wow. I mean, I don't necessarily will say I agree or disagree with you, but I actually agreed with him in that I feel like when we think of cinema, yes, there is attractions, but these Marvel movies and all these Disney stuff, what they're doing is they're becoming so formulaic.
Yeah.
And we're not getting attractions like a mix of attractions. We're getting literally same formulas over and over and over again.
I agree with that totally.
I feel like it's more like a serial. I would argue that the Marvel movies are more like movie serials.
And yeah, and Star Wars is like that too now.
Yeah, like, so when he says cinema, I thought of cinema as in that experience, and these experiences are different over time, but now that Disney owns everything, we're literally getting the same different formulas. Like, the Marvel movies are very similar to Star Wars.
Totally agree with you, and I understand what you're saying, but I don't think that's what he's saying. He very clearly is saying cinema is about human themes and human beings conveying emotion. He is defining cinema in this very, very narrow way.
Yeah.
It's saying this is what cinema must be. And that's only one thing that cinema can be.
Mm-hmm.
Cinema can be a lot of things.
Cinema can be a lot of things.
And this is what pisses me off, because Scorsese is so knowledgeable. He should know this.
Well, you bring up Méliès, which, of course, because Scorsese is a huge film history nerd.
Right.
Right? Like, any interview that you talk to him about movies, he eventually brings up his vast knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Méliès was tapping into the curiosity and of what tricks we can play with camera. So,
right.
Which goes deep down into, I would arguably say, a human idea, is what can we play with? How can we play with perception? Whereas Marvel movies are literally the same all the time.
I don't think your argument tracks. If the trick films, what we call the trick films from like Georges Méliès or Alice Guy Blaché, who made the Cabbage Fairy in, I think, 1903 or 1902. If those are getting into something human, I say then so is Star Wars or fucking Transformers. It's they don't call them trick films anymore. Now they call them special effects films. But it's the same thing. And also, I think so.
Well, I mean, but Alice Guy Blaché and Georges Méliès were in a very specific time period where this is a new thing. This is so new. We're playing with it to find out what can we do with this form.
Okay.
Whereas Marvel and Disney movies and Star Wars are not doing that. They're literally doing the same archetype over and over again, to a point where I don't know if we're ever going to get sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we will get sick of it, but it doesn't stop it from happening.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. But now, I would say you're right that what the early filmmakers were doing was novel. But I would still say that the function of those films was to get people out of their lives. Because when you talk about early cinema, in early popular cinema, you have to talk about the Nickelodeon craze. The Nickelodeons were the 5-cent theaters that were popping up from like 1909 to 1911 was their big heyday.
Right, right. But what
and that was all like foreign people, working people. That was the proletariat and their shitty lives. And they worked and there was no labor laws. And for 5 cents, they got to escape their lives. And isn't the world shitty now?
But what you're doing, but I'm not disagreeing with that point.
Right.
But if you're picking very specifically Méliès and Alice Guy Blaché.
Right.
But they were the only ones doing something very different in that way. Most of the Nickelodeon movies were actually real life experiences. People walking from a factory, a couple kissing, cats boxing.
But that was earlier. No. Those films, what they call the actualities, which we would now call documentaries, that's much earlier. That's like the early 1900s. The Nickelodeon stuff, which you're right, it's not all science fiction. Some of it's comedies like Chaplin and stuff. But it's escapism. It's, you know, it seems like what Scorsese is saying is movies need to deal with this thing of being alive. And if a movie is not dealing with it, it's not a movie. And I'm saying, I think very often movies are supposed to actually give you a reprieve and a respite from the shitty life you have.
But what's the respite from the never-ending respite? Like, we're literally, it's not like, like, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But the way these movies are coming out,
mm-hmm,
pumped out so fast and so regularly, it's not escapism anymore. It's literally, you're turning it into your life. People who are going to these movies, they're going to see everyone, and they're going as soon as they come out,
right?
And they're exactly similar. They're all the same.
Yeah, but they're all not hearing about kids being ripped from their parents at the border. They're all not Trump. They're all, you know, yes, they're all superhero movies, but...
I don't think he means, when he says human stories, he means everything has to be serious and in the real life.
I think he means the movies he makes. That's what I think he means, to be honest with you. But let me ask you something that I don't understand. What do you think Francis Ford Coppola means by saying they're despicable? How do you read that? Because I really don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. I can only talk about what I feel about those movies, which that we are getting too much of them and they're flooding the market and they're actually marginalizing American cinema to a point where if we want a different type of movie, we might have to only get it once or twice a year, or we'll have to go to foreign film.
Yeah.
So that's how I see it, but I can't, because his statement is so vague and he did not touch up on it, we don't know exactly what he was talking about.
Yes. See, I think you're right, but my stance on it, I think that different media can do different things.
Yes.
If right now movies are all Star Wars and Marvel, that's fine. I'll go watch something smarter on Netflix. I'll go watch... TV is better. You know what I mean?
Even like, video games have better stories than like these Marvel movies.
Exactly. There are things I get from movies. There are things I get from video games. There are things I get from novels. There are things I get from short stories. And there are things I get from TV. And maybe Scorsese, movies are so important to him, he wants movies to be a lot of different things. But to me, I honestly don't care if movies is just giving me Star Wars.
Okay.
If I want something deeper, I'll go and watch a series on AMC.
I absolutely agree with you. I'm not... I think it's another kind of, honestly, white male privilege bullshit that he thinks he could say this kind of thing. Especially how the general public feels about it. Because if these movies did not make a ton of money, mm-hmm. then they wouldn't exist anymore. But they make a lot of money, and a lot of money is pumped into them. So that means there are a lot of people that are enjoying this stuff and are watching it.
Right.
So for Martin Scorsese just to come out with that, which I don't... What was the context? Was he in an interview or something?
Yeah.
Okay, so like he should have phrased it differently. It's more like to each their own.
I think one of the things that rubs people the wrong way about it is it feels a lot like just an old man saying, get off my lawn.
That's exactly what it is.
It feels like these people that were really powerful filmmakers in the 70s and 80s. Like when Francis Ford Coppola was making the Godfather movies, he was so powerful. And really, what's he done lately?
He made Shitty Wine. That's exactly what he does.
It seems like these old men just shaking their fists at the sun going, oh, you don't know.
Well, that's why I'm saying it's a white man privilege thing.
Yeah.
Because only a white man would come out and phrase it in such a way, something that is so popular that it's taking audiences away from your own movies. So you have to, he should have phrased it differently. Yeah. He should have just been like, to each their own.
It's interesting to call them theme park rides.
I mean, I get it.
I get exactly what he means, but I also think theme park rides are freaking great. I think you can make the argument that what Disney did with theme parks is, you know, at some point Disney the man, mm-hmm. he stopped caring about his movies and started caring more about Disneyland and Disney World. And you can make the argument that that's an evolution. He was like, let me play with narrative in this different way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I appreciate all of this stuff.
But I think if we use the term theme park ride, then we're thinking in terms of like it's thrilling in the moment, but it leaves you with no substance afterwards. Whereas if he's talking about human movies in human form, then they're movies that give us something to digest later, to come back to. Like, I mean, kind of like the last time we spoke when we were talking about the VHS movies. They were fun in the moment. They're great for Halloween.
Yeah.
But they're literally forgettable.
Sure, absolutely.
It's like eating a funnel cake. Like, it was great now, and then like 2 hours later, I'm
diarrheaing everywhere.
Yeah, it's not great.
All right, thank you very much for your insight. Let's move on to more of the kind of movies that Scorsese doesn't like. There's a rumor going around that I think is bananas, which is that they might make, because the Joker was so popular, and I'll talk about the Joker later, I think, it's, I didn't like it, mm-hmm. but the Joker is so popular that they're thinking about making a Batman Beyond movie and casting Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne again, as the old Bruce Wayne.
Because
Batman Beyond is about, it's Gotham City in the future, and Batman is like an old mentor figure to this young new Batman. And
I actually liked that show.
You did?
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it since.
But. Yeah. It would be interesting. I mean, it would be... I like Michael Keaton as Batman. It would be cool to see him as Batman again. I don't know. I never watched the show, so I don't have any feel. I don't even know what the name of the new Batman is in that series.
I thought it was just Batman.
No, but like, what's his Bruce Wayne name? Like, who's the kid who played... Who is the new Batman?
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, neither do I. It's just a rumor. What else is going on? So they're making another Jurassic World movie, but this one actually has all three of the main stars of the first Jurassic Park movie. It's got Jeff Goldblum, it's got Laura Linney, and it's got Sam Neill, the three protagonists of the first Jurassic Park.
So we're just going to watch a bunch of old people run away from a dinosaur?
I guess so.
So aren't they just going to fall and break their hip and then...
It's a weird turn for the series. I actually was one of the only people that liked the last Jurassic World movie. I didn't like the first one at all. But the last one, like, it ends with, like, the dinosaurs getting loose. And it's like Planet of the Apes. It's just, like, there's dinosaurs everywhere.
Oh, that's cool.
And I kind of want to see, like, what fucking happens next. Like, I just want to see dinosaurs everywhere.
I mean, that's something that I don't think has been done before. With, like, an apocalypse with dinosaurs.
Right. That's why I liked the last one. It was so bananas. It was insane, the last one.
I didn't see it. I only watched the Chris Pratt first one where what was it? The Navy trained him so that he could... And then
they were training raptors. We saw it together.
Yeah, we laughed through that entire movie. Yeah,
we really annoyed the people in front of us.
We ruined... It was actually the people in front of us were grandparents and their grandsons. Yeah. So we basically ruined grandparents' day.
Because not only are we being loud in a movie, our laughter is saying we're better than you. Because you're liking this and we're laughing at it, therefore we're better than you.
Well, we were also commenting. We were the worst people in the theater.
We were... I'm usually not shitty in a movie theater at all, but we were pretty shitty in that movie. But I couldn't not laugh.
Wasn't the Mercedes truck the star of that movie?
Oh, yeah, it was. But Chris Pratt is in the next one, and I like the next one. But I also like that it's bananas. But everyone hates the last one because of how weird it is. I like that it's like, finally, since part one, they've done something different. And if you want to hear more about this, there is a Jurassic Park series episode on Pop Culture Man Children. Just take a look down. Where can you find Pop Culture Man Children? Well, you can find it anywhere podcasts are available. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, radio.com, whatever that is. We're everywhere.
Radio.com.
So this is another interesting thing that's happening, which is, and this was Variety has been... broke this story.
Okay.
Do you remember the Disney Vault?
Yes.
It was the imaginary vault in which Disney would keep its old films so you couldn't buy them and enjoy them and they could re-release them every so often.
Yeah, and they used to have that in the commercial on television.
You'd see the vault open.
It would be like a literal like bang.
I think it looked like Mickey's silhouette.
Yeah.
Well, now that they've bought 20th Century Fox, they're putting some of Fox's old movies in the vault. And there are these stories of these repertory movie theaters like trying to get like a print of Alien. And Disney's like, nah, you can't have Alien right now. And people are getting mad because, you know, with Disney owning 20th Century Fox, Disney is becoming like a monopoly of popular culture. And now that they're pulling it away... I have this like, to me, I've got this in my mind, this dystopian future where popular culture is itself a commodity and like the poor don't get art in movies. They like have to live in like blank rooms with white walls like, and then the rich get movies and books. And, you know what I mean? Like that's where I feel like this is a step towards because it's like now Disney owns everything and they're putting it away. I like don't put it away. Like
that really worries me.
It's worrying, right? I don't like it.
I was actually one of the first people who were absolutely terrified when Disney announced that they were buying Marvel, because I was like, this is not good. And it has already, we've already gotten to this point where it's just Disney is using all that money. But yeah. They have so much money that they are using that money to buy more things, and right. No one's stopping them. There's no right. antitrust laws anymore.
Oh, no.
So we're just, Disney's going to own everything, and everything's just going to be Disney Plus now.
Right. That's why Disney Plus is going to be, it could actually beat Netflix.
I think it is. I think Netflix is going to fold. Because it's
like, here's everything. Disney Plus is like, here's everything that you like. Here's all of relevant popular culture. Because after Marvel, they bought Star Wars. And of course, they own ESPN, which I don't give a shit about, but there are sports fans out there. So that's a big part of, that's, you know, I imagine a big part of the world of sports entertainment. The Muppets, which I don't think Disney's ever really known what to do with.
Yeah.
But they own that. I mean, they own everything.
Yeah. They also own the old LucasArts stuff.
Yeah.
So there are some like LucasArts games, like the old timey stuff. Not really movies so much, but like it's very hard to get re-releases of them or to even like have them back because Disney just keeps them but doesn't do anything with them.
Right.
So it's just like everything's just going in that vault.
Yeah, I know.
We're all going to be forced to get a Disney Plus subscription. I mean, I'm sure you already have yours.
I don't have mine yet, but I'm going to fucking get it the day it comes out because I want to see the new Star Wars show.
Yeah.
It's a live action Star Wars show. I also want to see the show. There's a documentary series on Imagineers and the making of Disney attractions and rides.
I mean, they already
got you. I'm
going
to Disney World in February.
That's so exciting.
And I'm counting the fucking days. I can't wait. I'm going to unabashedly love it. And I'm going to do some podcasts from there too. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, wow.
I'm staying in the Little Mermaid room.
Oh, my God.
Not to brag about my lifestyle.
This is a dream trip for you.
Have you ever been to Disney World?
Once I walked through it.
I'm sorry, what?
So this is kind of weird. My cousin lives in 20 minutes from Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
His first wedding, he got married, and so we went to Florida for the first time to mm-hmm. go visit him and be in this horrible wedding. And so Disney wasn't necessarily a part of the trip at all, but at right. one point the group was like, why don't we just
go? We're in Orlando.
Yeah, let's just go to Disney World. But we went in the evening. So, like, a lot of the rides weren't even, like, on anymore.
There's
so
just a lot of, like, firework shows and stuff.
Yeah, we just walked through and saw, like, a firework show, and I'm like, this is boring.
You didn't go on any rides?
No.
Well, that's why it's boring. You didn't really do it.
Exactly. I failed at theme parking.
You did. You totally failed.
But, I mean, I was, like, 12 years old, and I was with a group of 25 people. Like, no one was going to wait with me to be on a damn ride.
But you were so young. If I was 12, I would have cried if I couldn't go on a ride. I would have been like, I'm here in Disney World. What a cock tease.
Wait, maybe I was older? I don't know what. I just remember I was young enough where I couldn't be by myself, but I was old enough to not give a shit that I could go on a ride. So somewhere there.
I literally I have an app on my phone that's a countdown app.
And it's just counting down Disney?
Yeah. As of the time of this recording, I will be going to Disney World in 4 months, 1 day, 0 hours, 12 minutes, and 52 seconds, 51 seconds, 50 seconds.
How long's your trip?
It is going to be 6 days.
Whoa.
Yes. But it's off season, so it's not too brutal.
Yeah, going in February. No one travels in February.
And I'm going to be glad to be... It's February into March, literally. So I'm going to be glad to not... To be here... March is the month I hate more than anything. March is so depressing. I hate March.
Wait, why?
Because it's snowy and cold, and it's just like... You just like feel like the winter's never going to end, and I hate March.
Okay.
So to be in some place where it's nice will be a nice reprieve. Plus, I'm going to go to Star Wars World, and I already have that all planned. I know what I'm going to get. I know the fucking... I'm going to go to the bar. I'm going to get the fucking tiki drink that has Ewoks on it. I've got it all planned.
Are you going to be in costume? Are you cosplaying?
No. You can't cosplay because that's not allowed because they don't want kids to think you're an official person. But what people do is they like wear sort of themed clothing.
Oh, so you're just going to wear your t-shirts.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. My friend Jen has outfits for every park. Like, she's got an outfit that's not a costume, but it's very Star Wars-y.
Okay.
It's like something someone could wear in Star Wars, and she's going to wear that to the Star Wars land.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm going to wear.
I honestly, I just picture you in your t-shirts.
I mean,
because you don't really wear hats.
I'm gonna buy a lot. I'm gonna wear hats because I have bald head and I don't want to get cancer. I wear a hat in the sun now.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm old.
Yes.
Not like a big floppy sun hat, but like a baseball cap.
You wear a baseball cap?
Yeah, I do.
Oh my god.
But I don't like sports, so I have a baseball cap that's a Ghostbusters baseball cap. That's what I wear.
I don't think I've ever seen you in a baseball cap before.
I really only wear it if I'm like going to be outside for a long, prolonged period.
So you have successfully maneuvered into middle age.
Oh, yeah.
But you're going to look like a dad in the park. They're going to be like, where's your kid? And you're like, I'm here for me.
Yeah, there's no kid here. But I probably won't take pictures with the hat on. Because, you know, Instagram is a big part of this now.
Yeah.
So you gotta gram everything.
I mean, that's not part of your aesthetic either.
No, yeah. The hat's not a part of my overall aesthetic. I'll be buying a lot of t-shirts there for sure.
I expected that as much.
I mean, I'm going to really stock up. Mm-hmm. The other day, someone at work said, I haven't seen you repeat a shirt. And I was like, thank you. But it puts a lot of pressure on me because now I don't want to repeat anything. All right. Let's talk about trailers. Let's go to Trailer Corner. We watched 3 trailers today. Let's see. We watched Richard Jewell, which is a biopic of Richard Jewell, who was a real life security guard who in 1993 discovered a pipe bomb in a bag and helped get people out of it was during the Olympics. I think it's Centorial Park, something like that. And he like saved people's lives and he became a media celebrity. But then the cops thought he was the one who did it. So people started to turn on him and it kind of ruined his life. And it doesn't say this in the trailer, but after I watched the trailer, I looked it up and he was exonerated because they found the guy who actually did it. So he is innocent. But the trailer's about how the FBI basically like they decide it's him and then just want to get him.
Yeah.
It looks really good. It's directed by Clint Eastwood, and I tend to not see Clint Eastwood movies because they're usually ideologically very conservative.
Yeah.
But I can't ignore the fact that Clint Eastwood is a good technician. He is a good filmmaker, and he's of an era of like, you know, he was an actor and now he's a director. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's sort of like an old fashioned movie director. Like he's also, like John Ford or whatever.
But he's also good at it.
He's good. Yeah, he's very good.
Like,
you know, I mean, he's a little boring. Like, yeah. I've heard he kind of sucked the joy out of Jersey Boys, but he's good. I mean, he's good. He's a good director.
That wasn't a good movie.
I didn't see it.
It wasn't good. You were not missing anything.
Yeah. But this looks good. It's called Richard Jewell. The guy who plays Richard Jewell was just a sort of like schlubby guy. The guy who plays him is, I don't know his real name, but he played the fat friend in I, Tonya. The one who was like always like
the incompetent fat friend. Yeah.
The one who was like, I trained with the FBI. And then he was like, no, you didn't. You have no military record. And he's like, oh, well, I'm a martial arts expert.
Yeah, I don't remember this actor's name, but he was pretty kind of typecast as the idiot fat friend. But he's enjoyable in those roles.
Maybe this will make him a star. It's the perfect role.
You know, now that they're making movies about everymen who look like average Joes, they have to like find, now they're getting all the actors that are average Joes. Like, come here, now instead of the fat friend, you're the star.
Yeah.
So maybe this will make him like popular. Because he's playing the role, at least for only what we see in the trailer, really well.
Yeah.
It's very believable.
Yeah. And you, I'm not sure if the film, what the film's going to do, if the film is going to try to create an ambivalence about his guilt or if the film is going to be about he's an innocent guy who's being sort of pursued by the police. I'm not sure how the film is going to handle.
I think it's the second one because the official trailer on YouTube actually has like know his story or something phrased in a way or know his story and see something, but the way it was phrased made me think that they're already playing it as he's innocent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It looks very good though.
It does.
You know, he's Clint Eastwood's such a, he's so good with light and shadows. Like there's a lot of like there seems to be like a framing device in the trailer where the FBI agents, one of which is played by John Hamm, they're like, they want him to say the line that the bomber said on the phone. They're like, can you say this line? Because they want to see if it sounds like the same voice. And it's like, they're in some interrogation room, but it's like pitch black. You could just barely see their facial features. And, you know, he's very good with light, I think.
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood.
Especially the way the light is always on the main character.
Yeah.
And like John Hamm and the other guy go in and out, like in and out.
Yeah.
And like even when they're in the light, they're always partially obscured.
Yeah.
So it works really well. And John Hamm actually in those, of course, it's very short, mm-hmm. but he seems very menacing.
He seems like he's the villain.
Yeah.
And I think he's a good, he plays, it's good to make him the foil because the main guy is this sort of overweight, not very attractive, schlubby guy. And to make his opponent this very, very handsome man. I mean, like one of the things we know about John Hamm is he's very handsome. So it's like this very handsome man who decides that this not handsome man is the bad guy when he's really the hero. I think it's good casting, I think.
Yes. And probably not going to be in the movie, but a couple years ago, John Hamm was photographed in public wearing sweatpants
yeah.
with no underwear.
Right.
And he has a big dick.
Yeah.
So that's also another thing to keep in the back of your mind when you're watching this movie.
He's got like, a big old cock.
Yeah, he's like, he's got a big old cock. And he's going to whack you in the face with it.
He's going to whack you in the face with it.
He's going to beat up Richard Jewell with his cock.
You think like they're in the interrogation room, he just flops it out on the thing just to intimidate him?
Yeah, like that president.
Yeah. Oh, Johnson?
Yeah. Who had like the big dick.
Yeah. Apparently, he Louis C.K.'d people all the time in the White House and...
He'd be like, you see this, Johnson?
It. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was how he won arguments, apparently. Like, yeah. You seen Jumbo here?
Yeah, he called it Jumbo. Yeah, he was a weird fucking sick fuck. It looks good, Richard Jewell. The next trailer we watched was Uncut Gems, which I think looks fucking amazing.
I love the Safdie brothers. I've only seen one of their movies.
I've seen none of their movies.
Okay, so I have a recommendation for you.
Okay.
Good Time. It came out a few years ago. It stars Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
Now, when it came out, that was before Robert Pattinson was becoming well known for, you know, all his non-Twilight work.
Right.
He was coming off his Twilight work. Yeah. And so people were like, or even me in the theater were like, this guy was a sparkly vampire.
Right, right, right.
Like, this is going to be a fucking joke. That movie is incredible.
What is it about?
It's about Robert Pattinson plays kind of this like two-bit crook
uh-huh.
who convinces his mentally handicapped brother mm-hmm. to help him rob a bank.
Okay.
So it's all about being, and it takes most of the movie over an entire night.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, his brother gets caught. And what he's trying to do throughout the whole movie is try to bust his brother. His brother was harmed during the robbery, so he's in the hospital. So he's trying to figure out a way to bust his brother out and also keep the money.
Okay.
It's a very intense, thrilling movie.
Yeah.
Because Robert Pattinson is very, like, scary.
Yeah. He's going to be Batman, and I think he's going to be good at it.
He's going to be great at it. But anyway, Uncut Gems.
It looks like a very, just from seeing the trailer... It looks very tense. It looks very beautifully shot too.
That's their like trademark. Really tense and beautifully shot. And also their decision to go with Adam Sandler was very shocking to me.
I think he's proven himself. Here's the thing about Adam Sandler that's bizarre to me. He produces his own movies and they're all god awful. But I think he's actually a very good actor when he's in other people's movies.
What have you seen that he's a good actor in?
I think he's very good in Punch Drunk Love.
Okay. I honestly don't remember much about that movie.
I'm trying to think of something else now. Now my brain's going blank. But I think, he's very good in Funny People, the Judd Apatow movie.
Oh,
he can be good, but he also wants to cash in with the garbage. And so he becomes a joke. But I think in this movie, he plays a jeweler who I guess borrows. It's not too clear what the story is, but I think he borrows money from the mafia or from some organized crime. And he makes a bunch of crazy bets with it and goes around flashing his money and
wants to be, he seems like he's a hanger-on, he wants to be famous, he wants to like hang out with rappers. There's a scene where he's hanging out with some guys that I think are supposed to be, yeah, they're famous basketball players, because he says something, he makes a bet on them, and he's showing them a gold-plated Furby that you can hang around your neck.
Yeah, it was very, very weird. Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly what that story was.
Yeah.
But also, Lakeith Stanfield is hanging out with the... He doesn't
He's the basketball player, I think.
But
he's the one who calls him a crazy Jew. He goes, this is a crazy Jew.
Oh, yeah, but I actually thought he was just part of the crew. I didn't know he was... Because the other guy is really tall. Like...
No, I think he is, because somebody... Because Adam Sandler goes, hey, it's game night, you should go stretch out. And then somebody says to him, who's that, your coach? And he goes, no, that's just some crazy Jew. So oh, I think okay. he is.
I guess I was so focused on the really tall guy. Like, yeah,
I don't know anything about basketball, so I don't know
what
would make somebody good or not at basketball.
I assume being tall, because you have to jump less.
But aren't there different positions?
I don't know anything.
Welcome to another episode of Nerds Don't Understand Sports.
It's a ball, it goes in a hoop. I don't know.
Thanks, Nadia. Back to me. By the way, speaking of Lakeith, is it Stanfield?
Stanfield, yeah.
Did you see Sorry to Bother You?
Oh, I love that movie.
So fucking good, right?
He was great in that.
Such a crazy movie.
He was also great in Get Out.
Yeah, he's really good. He's good in Atlanta, too.
Yeah.
I like just from seeing the trailer, I like the weird acting decisions that Adam Sandler's making. He seems to be playing this guy in a very odd way. Like, he's very, he's always smiling, and he seems like, I don't know, like very soft spoken. Like, there's a scene where it looks like he's locked the mafia guys up in his, he has his jewelry, I don't know, what do you call that? A jewelry store?
Yeah, I think so.
Whatever. And, you know, but like, because there's so much precious items, like you have locks and various things, and he looks like he's locked up the gangster guys who are threatening him in his store. And one of the gangster guys is like, are you having fun, like talking to Adam Sandler, who's like looking at them, and he goes, he like looks at them and he's like, yep. Like he just seems like he's making really weird choices acting wise and I don't know, it looks fascinating to me.
I'm really on the fence about it, because I don't remember good Adam Sandler acting roles.
But what about just a little bit you see of him in the trailer?
The little bit I see, I'm like, I could see that this being a good movie. Mm. But I'm wondering if I can separate Adam Sandler, the, like, what has he done? Like,
the clown?
The clown, from Adam Sandler, the actor, you know?
I think...
He's so identified with those movies.
You're totally right, but I think he can be good. I think he could even be subtle.
Yeah.
Not in his own movies.
Other people's movies.
Other people's movies.
But I also trust the Safdie brothers, because they make really sound acting choices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with their actors and their cinematography and everything is really well. So I think that them making that decision to go to Adam Sandler is really interesting, and they probably pulled something out of him that will be good.
Yeah.
So I'll see it. Like, yeah, I'll definitely see it, because I really like I love their aesthetic.
I'm sure Martin Scorsese is going to see it. This is what he wants. No, it looks really good, and I want to see Good Time too. Just this trailer, like, got me.
I highly suggest Good Time.
And it's rare that a trailer, I think, sells me.
Really? Rare?
Yeah. I mean, I like trailers a lot, but...
That's my favorite part of the movie.
Right. But to see a trailer that I had no prior knowledge of, and to be like, oh man, now I'm excited about that, I feel like doesn't happen that often. Maybe once a year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know what I mean?
And that was the movie.
Yeah, mostly it's things like Star Wars, where I know I'm excited about the movie and I'm just looking forward to the trailer so I could see some glimpses.
Right.
Where it's like, to see something out of nowhere and be like, what is this? And then be like, ooh, that looks really good. I feel like that doesn't happen to me a lot.
I mean, that's exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, I will go see that movie if you want to go see it.
Absolutely.
The Safdie movie, I'll definitely watch it with you.
The last trailer we looked at I want you to tell me. I want you to say what you texted me when I texted you the trailer. The last trailer we looked at was Doolittle.
Yeah. So Doolittle starring Robert Downey Jr. And yeah. My first reaction was, who the fuck asked for this?
I don't know.
Who was like, you know what? You know what the kids really need right now? Which is an unfunny period piece right. about Dr. Doolittle going on a boat adventure on a ship filled with animals that he talks to.
Yeah.
Who wrote this? Who asked for
it
this?
It seems, I mean, I've never seen the original, but this looks more like the original. The one in the 90s with Eddie Murphy, which I liked, is more of like kind of just a comedy and a remake in name only. Whereas yeah, this seems like it's more like whatever it's a... I imagine it's based on a kid's book. I have no idea.
It seems like it. I mean, like, who else is reading about a doctor that talks to pets?
But,
or like, you know, whatever.
Here's the thing. I like Robert Downey Jr., but I think he's very bad at accents. I like his Sherlock Holmes movies, but I think his English accent sucks. And in this, he's doing an Irish accent. It's bad.
I could not tell what he was doing. It seemed... Irish, it seemed English.
It's
I was
vaguely
like,
European.
This?
Not everybody's good at everything, and he's not good at accents.
No.
And also, but he also, like, he seems to deliver every line with some odd whimsy. It seems like we're supposed to really be like, I don't know what we're all supposed to feel about Dr. Doolittle. Like, he's like, as if there are so many Dr. Doolittle fans out there, we're all like, oh, yes, this is what we, yes, it's our favorite character come to life again. But, like, he delivers every line with, like, ah, we're going on a great adventure. Like, we're supposed to be getting chills.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I really don't know who the fuck this is for.
Yeah, I was like, is it a kid's movie? Is it? I don't know.
I mean,
how many CGI animal movies are for adults? So, but.
It's, yeah. I mean, the original, I think, was a kid's movie.
Yeah, so I guess it's a kid's movie, but it also just like, everyone in the movie are adults?
Yeah.
And like animals, so I.
Yeah.
It seems like, I mean, this is what you're gonna do now, Robert. Like this is what you do after all those Marvel movies. Like this is your bounce back.
Yeah.
Look, I gotta
say.
Well,
he has all the money in the world now, so I guess this is probably something he's passionate about.
No, I think he's just like let me. I think that's just the first thing that showed up on his desk Monday morning. He's like, oh, I better take it because people are going to forget who I am after these Marvel movies ended. but like, what I got to say about Robert Pattinson, he did these crappy Twilight movies, like really awful. And he knew they were awful and he hated them. After they ended, he went out of his way to do really different, weird stuff.
Yeah.
And not all of it's good, but at least he's trying. I don't know what Robert Downey Jr. is doing with this.
Is he
trying? What is this? Is his?
I don't know.
Is his wife's cousin the producer? So he's like doing her a favor. Like, what's going on?
I really don't know. What? I don't think he's fighting for relevance. Maybe in a few years he might be fighting for relevance. I don't. You know, he just this year starred in the biggest movie ever. So
right.
I think right now he's still very hot. I don't know what. I don't know what he's trying to do, to be really honest with you. But he's getting very, very close. He's getting dangerously close to becoming the new Johnny Depp.
We do not need that.
We don't need that. We just certainly don't.
We are fine without. We have that one. We have Christopher Walken. We're done with this. We don't need this anymore.
Other than Chaplin, which was he played a biopic of Charlie Chaplin where Robert Downey Jr. played him. Robert Downey Jr. was never really the star of things. He was always a character actor. He would be part of an ensemble. And I think he's very strong in that role. And I think he was good as Tony Stark. But I feel like he might be dangerously like, I need to always be the star. The movie has to always be built around me. And I've got to be doing weird things. And that's when you get to Johnny Depp territory.
You know, I would actually love to see the opposite of that. I would love Robert Downey Jr. to like... quit being Iron Man and then just like be side characters in movies.
Yeah, go back to like being the bad guy in U.S. Marshals. You know what I mean? Like, go back to like being a character actor.
Have fun. Why don't you do some television shows? Guest star.
Yeah, he was on Ally McBeal. Do you remember that?
Now I do.
Yeah. He did a lot of... He's had such a weird career because he had... You know, he went to jail and he had a lot of public, like, you know, meltdowns and drug problems and stuff.
It's weird that we don't remember that, like, in the public imagination.
Yeah. Well, we remember it, but it's not relevant. It's like, it's not the narrative now. The narrative now is he's Iron Man.
Right.
And I bet younger fans of him don't even know that he played Charlie Chaplin.
No, they're like, who?
That he was in jail.
he went on benders, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like...
Well, right. He got in trouble because he went into someone else's house and went to bed.
Oh, my God.
That's fucked up. That's when you know you're really fucked up, when you're like... You're like, this isn't my bed. Wait, this isn't my house. All right.
Yeah, I'm not going to see that.
So you're excited about Doolittle? You want to pre-order the tickets now?
Man, the only way that I would see Doolittle is if we do an episode on it and we just spend the entire movie shitting on it like we did Jurassic World. And like, then I'll be like, I'm really just paying to make fun of this movie. I'm okay with that.
I can see this movie coming out and being a huge flop. And
it looks like a flop from the trailer.
Yeah.
It literally looks like this is the kind of movie that loses $10 million in the opening day.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Because it also doesn't show very much. You hear a very slow, melodic version of the Louis Armstrong song, Wonderful World.
Yeah.
And it's like, skies are blue.
I hated that.
And it's like, you see like... I don't know what, like birds flying and I don't know.
I literally hated every second of that trailer. Like the song, the pacing of the song, the brightly colored parrots, Robert Downey's accent, the little kid saying, Doctor, you Doolittle.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Oh God, no.
When I saw the trailer pop up on YouTube, I didn't know this movie was coming. And I was like, no, this can't be that. I was like, no, this can't be that Doolittle. And then I watched it and he's talking to animals and I was like, you're kidding me, right? Like, is this an SNL sketch? It
it would actually probably be a lot better as an SNL sketch. Like a serious, like a parody serious Dr. Doolittle movie. That'd be hilarious. Like Robert Downey Jr. in the gritty reboot of Dr. Doolittle.
I want Eddie Murphy to start a hashtag not my Doolittle movement.
I think Eddie Murphy right now is doing too good for that. Shockingly.
All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back with the chill sesh.
All right.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Man, Sheldon PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Miss... it's getting late. Ms. Nadia Cater.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm chilling. It's the chill sesh. I got my coffee. You made me a nice pour over.
Yes.
It's very smooth.
It's a single origin Ethiopia.
What does single origin mean?
So a lot of coffees are blends of multiple, especially stuff you get from the supermarket. They're blends of multiple types of coffees. So that's why a lot of American coffee will taste like just what you think is coffee. It just tastes like burnt or just like bitter.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you get single origin, which is mean bean is from one place, you actually bring out the flavor of the bean. So Ethiopian, and this one especially, is characterized as being like more like stone fruit or almost tart.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas coffees from South America will taste more like, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it tastes almost like dirt, but in a good way.
Earthy.
It's like a very earthy, yeah, thank you. It's very earthy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's coffees that taste like nutty.
Yeah, I like a nutty coffee.
You would probably like a Papua New Guinea.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know too much about coffee.
You were a barista.
I was a barista.
For a while.
For like 3-4 years. Yeah. I only really got into like pour overs and single origin stuff when I started working for this really tiny independent shop.
Which is gone now.
Oh no, actually that exists.
Oh, okay.
That exists. The larger company that I worked for actually in the last week closed down all their stores. All
right, let's not say their name.
We won't.
But they're gone. They're gone now.
They're gone.
So this is the chill sesh.
Chill sesh.
I don't want to get into a whole big thing.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say I didn't like the Joker movie. And not only did I not like it, I see it having a Fight Club effect of stupid people thinking it's really smart and profound.
I mean, that's...
Which is scary.
That's literally what's happened already.
Right. And my problem with the movie is... My problem with the movie is that I don't think it knows what it wants to say. It doesn't... It's very confused. It doesn't know if it wants to say that the Joker's a good guy or a bad guy. And if, by the way, if the movie said the Joker's a good guy, I would think that's irresponsible. But still, it would be a better film. Mm. The movie seems to have no balls. Like, it straddles the line of saying you should feel for the Joker or empathize with what the Joker's going through. But then it gets right up to the line where they're fully endorsing it, and then it backs off and fucking is it, there's a lot of cowardice in it. And the visuals, which seem to oppress a lot of people, are so derived from Taxi Driver and early Scorsese that even some of the costumes are the same. And it's like there's homage and then there's theft. And this is like theft. This is like, it's like a cover band. Like, yeah. Like, how about a Joker movie, but it's a cover of Taxi Driver? And I could see people who've never seen Taxi Driver looking at it and going, wow, it's so beautiful, because it is beautiful. But I'm looking at it like I'm watching a cover band, because it's like I've seen this image before. I've seen this color palette before. I've seen that exact suit before. The writing, I don't know. I felt the script wasn't good. The script was half-baked. There are some interesting ideas in it, but again, it wimps out.
Yeah.
Let me say spoiler alert for what I'm about to say, okay?
Please
so
do.
Spoiler alert. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The movie brings up this interesting idea that maybe that the Joker's mom worked as like a maid for Bruce Wayne's dad, and that they had an affair, and maybe he's actually Joker's dad. And Bruce Wayne's dad is portrayed as a rich bourgeois asshole. He's like a villain. And that was so interesting to me. And then the movie introduces that very cool idea, and I'm like, all right, I like what this is doing. It also would make sense that he doesn't like Bruce Wayne, but you know what I mean? Because Bruce Wayne is the son that he loves. But then you find out that the Joker's mother is crazy, and she did work for him, but didn't have an affair with him. So Bruce Wayne's not his dad, but still Bruce Wayne's an asshole. It's just like the movie's just like.
It seems like a lot going on.
I wish it
and
had
not saying
gone,
much.
Right. I wish it had gone with that idea, because that would have been. So clever. When that idea first is sort of broached in the movie, I was like, ooh, this is something.
Yeah.
I like this. I like that they're setting up Bruce Wayne's father's like a rich asshole. Cause it seems like the movie that's another thing. The movie seems to flirt with sort of Marxist ideology.
Yeah.
But again, it you know, it never goes far enough. It wimps out. At every turn, it wimps out.
That sounds like such a disappointment.
Yeah, I did not like it. And Joaquin Phoenix is very good in it. But I'm sorry. If we lived in a world where there wasn't a Dark Knight and there wasn't a Heath Ledger performance, this would be mind-blowing and revolutionary. But we're living in a world after that performance.
So we've already seen that.
Right. We've already seen somebody take the Joker and add real complex psychology to it and make him scary. We've kind of already seen it. And I'm not saying that he's doing an impression of Heath Ledger. I think he is doing his own thing, but there's no impact to it because we've already seen it.
Okay. I have not seen it because... Yeah, I don't feel like I'm missing much. And it also plays into I don't give a shit about backstories. Like, the Joker is just a villain. And I think if you think of it as, like, with Bruce Wayne, we know literally everything about him.
Right.
We know about his parents. We know about his tragedy. We know his, like, his double life.
Yeah.
The Joker, we never knew anything.
And that's what's powerful about the Joker, that he's this blank slate.
Yeah, and he always has a different story. And of course, that's because different writers are writing for him.
Right.
But you can also interpret it as like someone who keeps changing right. so even, much, you don't even know right. what the real, he doesn't know what
even his truth is. Even in The Killing Joke, which is basically an origin story, it's implied that it might not be true. And then you've got that interesting thing in The Dark Knight where Heath Ledger explains his origin three times and he gives three different stories. So you're like, right.
That's fun.
Knowing the Joker's name and, yeah, I don't know. It's...
And that he has, I'm only going by what, like, my sister who told me about the movie because she saw it.
Yeah.
It's like he had mental illness and, like, he had a laughing disease or something.
It's a real thing that I think exists. It's when you're nervous, you laugh. Which is, again, it's a clever idea, but they don't do a lot with it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's...
I'm like, who gives a shit if the Joker has mental... Like, are we supposed to feel bad for him? I don't understand.
I don't know what you're supposed to feel.
Because he's a mass murderer, so, like, despite whether or not he has mental illness, yeah. it's irrelevant. He is complicit in crime.
And in the movie, he kind of becomes, like, a hero, like a vigilante hero, because in a scene very, very close to what happened in real life with Bernie Getz... He's attacked on the subway and he kills his attackers.
Oh my God.
Which to me, that was too close to the real story of Bernie Getz. Because Bernie Getz, if you don't know Bernie Getz, look him up. I think it was the 80s or maybe the 90s. He was attacked by some people on a train and he fought back. And he was like a real life vigilante. Like people like treated him like a superhero. But the more we learned about Bernie Getz, the more we realized he was an angry white dude and his attackers were African American and he really reveled in killing them. And we found out that he was or injuring them. And we found, I don't think he killed them. And then we found out that he was really very racist, and conservatives stuck with him, but more sensible people were like, oh, this guy's not a hero. But there's too many shades of that in the Joker movie for me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just like saw that trailer and I'm like, I really don't care.
I don't care, but I really hope it doesn't become a fucking classic. I don't want to live in a world where it's like people are like,
I hope.
Luckily, I don't teach film anymore, so I don't have to read some kid write a paper on the Joker.
Yeah, I mean that's thank God for that. I already experienced like two different scenarios where I was in the peripherals of people talking about the Joker and how it's like, oh, you know, the whole point, it's about mental illness and awareness, God. And I'm just like.
It's no. not a smart movie.
It's I didn't see it, and I could tell it's not a smart movie.
And it's director Todd Phillips who did the Hangover movies.
Okay.
He said...
the auteur over here.
Yeah. He said you can't make comedies anymore because the world's too PC. And Marc Maron, who's actually in Joker, like criticized him and was like, you can't make comedy where you're punching down at people, but there's actually a lot of funny stuff happening. So I actually like Marc Maron's response to that because I think it is a bullshit argument when people go, it's too PC. It's like... Maybe a certain kind of mean-spirited comedy can't exist anymore. But by the way, it also can. You know what I mean? You can do it. You know, I don't know. I feel like it's just guys that want to say the F word.
The N word?
No, the F word. But not fuck.
Oh.
The slur for homosexual men.
Oh.
They want to call each other that and be allowed to do that again. They miss that.
So
I think that's what's behind it.
Yeah, I think people just miss being racist and homophobic.
Yeah, yeah. Those were the good old days.
Fun times, right?
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, Hangover is not that long ago, yet I think there is a lot of stuff in it you wouldn't be able to do. And that's probably why he's speaking the way he is, because he's the auteur behind the Hangover
isn't
trilogy. Isn't
in the second movie, like, a monkey puts its mouth on someone's penis?
I didn't see – I only saw the first one and I hated it, and I didn't see two or three. So I don't know.
Oh, the second's terrible.
I do know that in the first movie, one running gag is that Zach Galifianakis says the R word a bunch of times.
When was the last time that word was funny?
I don't know, because it's not funny in that movie. So I don't know the last time that movie was – you know what? That word was funny.
Yeah. Ugh. Sucks.
Anyway, what are you chilling with?
Well,
any axes you have to grind?
I've been chilling with, so I do a lot of just chilling because working 6 days a week, I'm just burnt out so sure. much. So I decompress with two different things.
Okay.
I am Seinfeld reruns on Hulu.
Really?
I know. I used to hate it. But there's something about low and no stakes sitcoms that I'm like really appreciative of.
Wow.
Because like what's the worst thing that happens in a Seinfeld episode is that nothing, George's really. Girlfriend sees him do something gross. Like that's like, because he's a terrible person. Like I didn't want her to know I'm terrible yet, right? Or Kramer has a get rich quick scheme. Like Elaine
you're
has
blowing
a stupid,
my mind right now.
Elaine
by
has
the
a
way.
Stupid boyfriend.
I'm trying to not judge you.
No, please. I'm totally fine.
What about do you like Friends?
I hate Friends.
I feel like Friends is exactly what you're talking about. Like if you want low to no stakes, just noise to have on after you've come home after work, Friends is the show for you.
Well, here's where I'll make two points to why I disagree with that. One, the Friends cast don't seem like people that will actually be friends. They literally seem like people written for a show.
Okay.
Seinfeld are a bunch of sociopaths.
Yeah.
That hang out with each other, but don't actually like each other.
Yeah.
But they think that they're better than other people.
Yes.
So that's why they spend time together. And that is pretty realistic.
Okay.
One, two, bad things happen to the characters because they're bad people.
Yeah.
Where on Friends, bad things happen, but they're not supposed to be bad people, but
no,
they actually
not.
Are bad people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where like Jerry, Elaine, Kramer, and George are all bad people.
Okay.
And it's even shown in the final episode where they watch someone get mugged and
they
just
don't do anything. Yeah.
And they just comment that like, hey, look at this fat guy get mugged.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they get arrested for it.
Yeah.
Like, and that's like kind of, I think overall, that overall wrapping kind of like, okay, that's funny.
I think there's a Seinfeld sweet spot that's like season 3, 4. You're like in the middle, it's like super, super strong. For me.
Yeah.
I think in the beginning, it's just not strong. The writing is not there. The acting is not there.
Yeah, the first season is horrible.
And then I think at the end, they lean too much into what you're talking about, them being bad people, and it just gets more contrived. I think the middle is the real sweet spot.
I've actually
But that's probably every sitcom as
well. Every sitcom has, yeah. I would actually disagree because I think the 9th season is hilarious.
Really?
Yeah, because
what about the Puerto Rican Day Parade episode?
I pretend that didn't happen. That's I have not been screening that one, but yeah.
Do they even show that in reruns? Probably not.
No, they took it off syndication, but yeah. It is on Hulu.
I guess you can't erase it from existence.
You could definitely delete the tapes. You could not syndicate it.
It's not syndicated.
I mean, you could not put it on streaming. Hulu made the choice to have every episode.
But doesn't, with a case like that, doesn't the streaming service, like, aren't they just giving you what's on the DVD?
My partner's Jewish, and she told me for the longest time she refused to watch Seinfeld because that's a show her parents really liked. And then I got her to watch the reruns with me, and we're actually enjoying them.
Okay.
Because she said it's very Jewish. And and in the past, she hated that, but now she kind of like, she'll appreciate it.
I think my problem, and this is maybe unfair, my problem retroactively with Seinfeld is how much I don't like him now as a person.
Oh, he's awful.
Because he's big on that bandwagon of the world's too PC and I can't make gay jokes anymore. And I can't go to colleges because these kids don't understand comedy anymore. And I just like, Seinfeld, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I mean,
you suck.
I get that. But it's also trying to separate the person from the character, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I think they're very similar, except Jerry the person is more angry.
Yes, because Jerry the character actually has almost no anger. It's actually kind of scary how he just like lets things roll off his back.
Yeah.
There's even one episode where his girlfriend of the week is breaking up with him.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay. And she's like, are you all right? Do you know what's going on here? He's like, yeah, I'll be fine. I always bounce back. And he's just smiling, and then he's just like drinking his coffee like she told him what the weather was. Like it has literally no effect on him whatsoever. And I think that's fascinating and also scary.
Because in real life, he's fucking so furious.
He's furious, and I think he's probably the kind of guy that's pretty possessive.
So what's the other thing?
I've been playing a game called Stardew Valley, which you're going to hate.
What's that?
It is a farming simulator.
Farming simulator. Where have you been playing that?
On the Switch.
Okay.
So it's a Wii. I recently bought a game controller that is an emulation of like the handheld, almost like a PlayStation controller or like a Super Nintendo controller, which is a lot easier to use than the Switch Joy-Cons.
It's a Wii game, but you're playing it on the Switch? Is that what you...
Oh, I'm sorry. It is a Switch.
Oh, it's a Switch game.
I'm playing it on the Switch.
Okay.
So basically, it is a. It has a loose narrative of your grandfather dies.
Sure.
And leaves you his farm in this small town called Stardew Valley. And you decide to move there and create a new life for yourself.
Okay.
So in the process of this game, you are farming, but you're also, you do other things, like you collect resources, you meet the townspeople, you get to know them, and...
So you spend your time watching Seinfeld repeats and playing farming video games. You are turning into a literal saltine cracker. You are becoming so white... That you are like a loaf of Wonder Bread.
Yeah, I need.
So is this game fun?
It is fun.
What's fun about it?
What's fun about it?
What kind of farm is it? Is it livestock or is it corn?
You do whatever you want.
Okay.
They have different.
Is it like Sims? Is it like do you plant it yourself and like control it all yourself?
Yeah, but in the Sims, they're kind of you don't actually plant anything.
Okay.
But, yeah, you plant stuff, you buy farm animals, you build barns, you go down the mines, collect resources, you go fishing. I'm mostly working on building friendships with the townspeople.
Sure, you want to... You want relationships friends. With the townspeople, of course.
Yeah, I
want
to get married and, like, adopt a child. That's one of the goals there.
Sure.
Look,
can you get gay married in the game?
Yeah, I'm working on that. You think I'm gonna marry a man?
I just don't. I don't know if the game even
let you do that.
Would let you? Yeah, have.
Yeah, it does.
Well, that's good.
I don't know exactly what you have to do to get married to somebody. I think you just give them gifts every day, and then they just like you.
That's how it works in real life.
You see them every day.
And you give them a gift.
Yeah, but I mean, really, it's just. Low stakes, kind of relaxing things.
That's a theme.
It's a theme in my life right now because I have two jobs.
Yeah.
So I just need something when I come home to like not think about.
I feel you. That's why so often I'll come home and I'll just watch YouTube videos about like Disney World. Like either like some oral history of like a ride or like some list of like the best snacks to eat at Disney World. I watch a lot of Disney World related very, very, like, non-upsetting content.
So, theme park?
Yeah.
You're just experiencing the theme park that Martin Scorsese is.
Yeah,
so
but, like,
of.
Literal. Not metaphor. Like, literally, I'm looking at theme parks.
At the theme
There's
park.
There's a couple of good ones. There's Yesterworld, which is a whole... it's like it's a YouTube channel, but like they make these little documentaries, and Yesterworld is all about old attractions and rides that don't exist anymore, and they do really good histories of it.
Do they do the Flintstones theme park?
I don't know. Maybe. They've done the Wizard of Oz one.
How long did that last?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think it still is around as a structure. But
it's not like a park anymore. Like you can't
pay. No, you can't
go
in it. No.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of interesting stuff.
I feel like that makes sense, though. Like, I never thought of the Wizard of Oz as, like, a theme park, but there's a lot of things that you can make theme parky.
Yeah.
Like, the Poppy Fields. Yeah. Going, maybe there's a Wicked Witch ride that's, like, really thrilling.
Yeah.
Stuff like bullshit like that.
Yeah.
The Emerald City is the food court. Like,
but when that gets a little too exciting for me, I'll watch like a video that's like top 10 vegan places in Disney, because I'm not vegan but I've been planning like my meals, so it's like, where am I going to eat my vegetarian meals in Disney?
That's a good question, because it's a theme park.
There are some good vegetarian stuff.
Disney knows that there's going to be always one of you guys.
What's amazing about Disney, right, is that for decades, this place that you spend a fuckload of money to go to has been putting all of its effort into making an experience for you that is completely pleasant in every possible way. Nothing about it will upset you or bother you. You'll have fun food. You'll have fun. Like, it's so not the real world.
Well, they're
it's fascinating.
They
want to
soothe you to sleep and take your wallet down.
Yeah, pocket. And I'm for it. I'm totally for it. So anyway, my point is, I get working all day and coming home, and like, I've been reading so much less lately. Like, cause it's like I come home and it's like, I know if I start reading, I'm gonna fall asleep in 2 minutes, and it's like 7 o'clock, so it's like I can't fall asleep yet. So. But I don't want to watch anything, so I'm just going to lay on my bed like I'm in a coma and look at YouTube.
I know so many people that have told me they do that. Like,
because looking at your phone is like doing something and not doing something at the exact same time.
Yeah. But then you're also, like you said, you're reading less. Maybe you're watching like less things that are actually like can gauge your attention.
Yeah. I've been watching very little.
Just work and YouTube?
Yeah, basically. And editing this podcast.
I mean, that in itself is exhausting. Yeah.
So that's what I've been chilling with. All right, let's take a break. Mm-hmm. We'll come back with obsessions. Welcome back to Pop Culture Mantra with PCMC. This is Obsessions. Nadia, what are you obsessed with?
I am currently obsessed with Andrew Wong YouTube videos.
Okay.
So you have no idea who that is, and that's fine.
I think I might.
So he's a YouTube musician.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a new media artist. So what he does is he creates music. He actually releases albums and tracks online.
Okay.
Not just through YouTube, but his YouTube channel, he has about 1 million subscribers, maybe a little more than that. And what he does is he has different categories of music-related videos. And I haven't always been a big music person, but there's something about him that I find really fascinating.
Okay.
Because he's very engaging. He has really good editing and production value for a YouTube series. Mm-hmm. Like, he's very careful with that.
Uh-huh.
So he's making like clear choices here. And the four categories, the three categories that he has of videos, mm-hmm, in which he divides them up are four producers, one sample, where listeners send in a sample for him to use. Mm-hmm. Three other producers, uh-huh, who are a various amalgam of his music friends or music, mm-hmm, people that he knows, take the sample and then create a new track with it.
Okay.
And they do it individually.
That sounds interesting.
It's fascinating because they do it individually, mm-hmm, and then they listen to each other's tracks. And they're all using the same original sample, but they come out with such different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the samples are vary a lot from like people like actually playing like an instrument.
Yeah.
To like one video was a guy playing like a melody on the piano, mm-hmm, and then they took that and made it into like someone made it into like club music. Mm-hmm. It's very fascinating.
Yeah.
And another episode, they used a closing door, like a metal door just slowly closing and shutting.
Yeah.
And they took that and made it into amazing tracks.
It's like Iron Chef. Like you know, an Iron Chef, they're like, today's ingredient is squid eggs and everyone has to cook something with squid eggs in it. It's like that, but with music and sound.
Yeah, it's a little like that. And what I like about the how they break it down mm-hmm. is that each person listens to the sample and then they're like, okay, what I like about this is blank, blank, blank. Mm-hmm. And this is what I'm going to do. So they break down how they make the track. So, and you could see it in like, of course it's not real time because they're mm-hmm. doing a whole day.
Yeah.
Of making this track or maybe more. And so that kind of works. So, and you get to see how it changes and what their thought processes are. Mm-hmm. So they explain what they want to do. So that's always fun. And then they like react to each other's tracks. So it's like
that.
Yeah, so it's like, oh wow, she really did this here and I really like the way she did this.
YouTube videos that are like you see something, how do I describe it? Like videos like that, or like videos where like it's a recipe and they're cooking something, or like there's a show I've gotten into called I think it's called Draw Off or Draw This, and it's like you get these artists and there's two artists or there's groups of two artists and they'll say like from memory, draw whatever character. They'll say like, all right, from memory, draw Superman. And but you can't have it's got to be from memory.
Oh, okay.
And two different artists, usually with different styles, will, I think it's called Draw Off. And like they'll draw it. And sometimes they remember it. Sometimes they're way off, so they just do their own version of it.
That sounds fun.
But what's fascinating is like you're seeing something being made. Like I watch it because I'm like, I want to see how these two different artists both interpret this character.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
Remember when YouTube was just like, I don't know, like clips of movies and like people yeah. doing pranks?
Now YouTube channels are some of my favorite shows.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other two categories he has is a song challenge, mm-hmm. where sometimes he takes like viewer requests and other times he just does whatever he wants. Uh-huh. And for example, he took, he created music with sounds from Mars. So like Mars sounds that NASA released.
Oh.
He did one time, he did a cover of Seven Rings by Ariana Grande with rings, like physical Ooh. Rings. He also, I think you would appreciate this. He covered the DuckTales theme song with various genres of music. So it wow. sounds different each time.
I gotta listen to that.
Yeah, there's also, he made music with candy. He made music with Lego pieces.
Like I'm listening.
He's really fascinating. Like he makes the process so interesting.
He sounds a little bit like, remember John Cage? He was a sound artist from like the 60s, but he did a lot of interesting shit like that.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like if John Cage was in a millennial generation.
And had a YouTube channel.
And had a YouTube channel. Yeah. And one of my favorite categories is what he calls weird gear, where he buys random instruments off the internet. Like some of them he's yeah. never even used before. Uh-huh. And then he'll like play around with it and explain, oh, this is the way the sound is, or this is weird. Why is it like this? Ooh. And then he creates a track. A lot of his YouTube stuff ends with him creating a track with the thing he discovers.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it has that same theme.
Yeah.
I also like seeing him work with very different producers because yeah. not only is he like showing you new people to follow, but he's also giving them an exposure that they might not have, because he's popular enough that he has a Twitter following, and there are some instances where he'll have a video and he'll be like, yeah, so this video, this company posted on Twitter, they saw me posting on Twitter and they reached out to me and they sent me this gear and we're going to play with it.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So
really have to like dive into this like today when I go home.
You're going home at like 2 a.m.
It's the kind of, but whatever, it's Friday. It's the, Friday, it really Friday, sounds like, Friday. Yes. It really sounds like the kind of thing I dig.
Yeah. I think you'd enjoy him. He's very goofy.
I'm for it. What does that mean? You think I'm goofy?
You are goofy. That's why I like you.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, so that's my current obsession is Andrew Wong YouTube.
That's a pretty good one. I like that.
Yeah.
What's the name of his YouTube channel? Is it just Andrew Wong?
Yeah, if you just look up Andrew Wong, H-U-A-N-G, he comes up.
H-U-A-N-G.
Yeah.
That's Wong?
Yeah. That's also pronounced Wong.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm into it. Yeah, I want to see that.
What are you currently obsessed with?
Well, okay, so the trailer for the new Star Wars movie came out, and it's very, very good. But actually, what my obsession is watching reaction videos to it.
Okay.
I like reaction videos to trailers, and I know that they're manipulative, and I know a lot of the people that make them are kind of, it's not 100% genuine. They're kind of acting a little bit.
Yeah.
But they are exaggerating something that they're really feeling.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It makes you, as a sort of geeky pop culture person, I like that community. I like feeling like other people reacting the way I am.
Yeah.
I like it. It also, did you watch the trailer, right?
I did watch the trailer.
I guess spoiler alert for the trailer if you're one of these weird people that doesn't want to see anything before the movie comes out.
But sure.
The trailer features a moment that's really surprising, which is it seems like C-3PO is going to die, however a droid dies. It seems like the trailer's going on and then it sort of stops in the middle and you see like this little alien like working on something in the back of C-3PO's head and you see wires coming out of his head. And you hear like Yoda's theme, the na na na, which is very melodic and sweet. And Poe Dameron says, "What are you doing there, 3PO?" And C-3PO goes, "Taking one last look, sir, at my friends." And
did you cry when you saw that?
Yes. And then that goes into a really chilling sounds scary, but like it gives you chills, like a version of the Star Wars main theme. But like a really strong version of it, and you hear Luke talking, and it's perfectly like hits all the buttons for a Star Wars fan, and it just comes out of nowhere because you're like, okay, you know, it's a Star Wars trailer, and like, oh, what's this? Oh, wait, what's happening? C-3PO, what?
Like Chewbacca?
He says, looking at my friends, and then he pats R2-D2 on the head, and then Chewbacca growls and it's like, oh my god, what are you doing to me? And there's so many reaction videos, and that's the part I'm so interested in, because I love seeing people have the exact same reaction I did, which is like, oh, this is interesting, wait, what's he saying, wait, no. And then like a lot of people cry at that moment, and you don't think you're gonna cry, because I tell you, as a Star Wars fan, I never even contemplated C-3PO dying, you know what I mean, on what that could mean. And it's just this weird gut punch of emotion in the middle of this trailer, and then like it just keeps going because it's C-3PO dying followed by R2-D2 and then the Star Wars theme in this very strong way, and then, you know, the title, the sort of text on the screen say, the saga will end but the story is forever. Because this is the last Star Wars movie, and they're very much selling it. It's like, this is episode 9. This is the end of the main Star Wars movies. And J.J. Abrams has said it's going to reference every other Star Wars movie. It's not just the end of this trilogy. It's part 9 of Star Wars. Going back to episode 1, it's going to reference everything. And that's very exciting. And then, you know, oh, then it ends with Rey, the protagonist of the new movies. And you hear Luke's voice saying, "The Force will be with you." And then you hear Leia's voice say, "Always." And that's a line from the original Star Wars. Obi-Wan Kenobi says to Luke, "The Force will be with you always." So having Luke say that, Luke already died in the movies. But Leia didn't die yet in the movies, but Carrie Fisher died in real life. And hearing her voiceover, it might mean that her character dies in the movie. They don't. Her character's performance in the movie is based on footage that was shot for the last two movies that was not used because she died before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just gut punch after gut punch. It, you know, J.J. Abrams is so good at being manipulative,
manipulative bastard.
Yeah, and just giving you the fan service that you so desire. So I'm obsessed with watching reaction videos to the Rise of Skywalker trailer. I like seeing other people cry.
The reaction video is so fascinating,
isn't it?
Because it brings Because, I mean, it never correctly, I mean, it never or intends to become the a replacement for the theater reaction, mm-hmm. but it helps you connect to other people. Mm-hmm. Like, exactly how you described. Yeah. Like, people are reacting the same way I am. Whereas when we watch these trailers at home or on YouTube, yeah. we're not having that audience reaction.
Right.
And there's something nice about that.
Yeah, and I don't think there would be... I wouldn't get anything out of watching a reaction before I saw it. Like, I have to see it and have my own reaction. And then it's a matter of watching other people react.
Right.
And seeing people be surprised at what I was surprised at. Because, especially a manipulative trailer like this new Star Wars trailer, because it pushes all these emotional buttons. And I want to see how other people... reacts to those buttons being pushed.
Yeah, it's really good at
that. That's why that C-3PO moment is so fascinating to me, because everyone reacts the way I did, which is the way the trailer was constructed. To first be surprised at the sort of break in the rhythm, and then kind of be like, what's happening? And then C-3PO say this very maudlin thing, and then the realization of, oh my god, C-3PO is going to die in this movie. And some people cry, and some people... or like, what? Excuse me? No. Like, some people freak out. So it's fascinating to me.
I didn't know people actually liked C-3PO. I always thought he was the joke.
Well, it's kind of like... I get exactly what you mean, but he's like the wallpaper. Like, he's there. Like, he's in... with not counting Solo, he's the only person who's in every Star Wars movie.
Oh. Okay.
And he's even... the actor is in Solo as a different character. So really, Anthony Daniels, who plays C-3PO, is the only person who's been in every single Star Wars movie.
He's still alive?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, he still does C-3PO.
Is that all he does?
Basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fine gig.
Yeah, whatever.
You know
what to
do. He
probably does stage somewhere or whatever, but...
maybe he has a one-man show.
Yeah, I'm sure he makes enough money through video games and cartoons. I'm sure being C-3PO is enough of a business for him that he's... perfectly comfortable.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I also have a fan theory.
Oh.
If I can share it with you.
Please do.
So C-3PO's memory was erased once before. In Star Wars Episode 3, his memory is erased. And they played as a joke because... you need it for continuity, because if C-3PO experienced everything in Star Wars Episode 1, 2, and 3, why wouldn't he mention it in the original Star Wars movies? Like, when he's with Luke in the original Star Wars, George Lucas had to explain, like, why would he not say, I was also your father's droid? So, mm-hmm. at the end of Episode 3, as a sort of throwaway joke, one character says, oh, erase his memory. But not R2's. The joke is R2 actually does remember everything, but doesn't talk about it.
Because he can't talk.
Right. So, we've already seen his memory erased once before. And in one of the comic books, they did this interesting thing where they were saying, like, when C-3PO shuts down and basically, like, sleeps, he sometimes has bits of, like, refracted information. And, like, the way it's shown in the comic book is, like, images from the original trilogy.
Oh, okay.
Not the original trilogy, from the prequels. Like, he'll have, like sort of not fully formed, like, impressions or memories of, like, characters from the prequels.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking...
that's interesting.
I'm thinking maybe he doesn't die. And even when I say die, he's a droid. Like, die, I'm putting in quotes here, because he can't die. But I'm thinking maybe what could happen is he, for the sake of, you know, he sacrifices his memory for the sake of the team, and they erase his memory. But I'm thinking maybe in the end... they restore his memory, and they restore all his memory, and he gets back the memories that he lost of Episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
And he regains all of that back. It's a theory that I have.
I mean, maybe.
Well, just thinking about how fan servicey this movie seems to be, and how...
isn't every Star Wars movie fan servicey?
This one seems more than ever, because it's the last one.
Okay.
It's also coming off of a movie that was very divisive, and a lot of people didn't like the last Star Wars movie. Mm. So this movie really has to, like, bring people back. And, you know, J.J. Abrams saying, like, oh, it's going to reference everything. Like, it's been said that John Williams... the score for this movie will reference every theme of all the movies. So like every bit of music from every Star Wars movie will in some way appear in this movie, which thematically means that there will be mentions of every single thing.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
So having his memory come back seems to be a way to tie it all together.
Mm. I mean, honestly, I've only watched original Star Wars and that one I went to see with you.
The Force Awakens,
which I think was my first time and your like 80th time.
I believe it was my fifth, actually.
Okay, yeah. So I'm not invested in Star Wars at mm-hmm. all. So I can't like comment on that other than like it just seems really fan servicey, and that could be the case.
Do you ever watch reaction videos of things that you're interested in?
No, but the last time I watched reaction videos was years ago, mm-hmm. where they had this, it was like a thing for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. which, I mean, this is really dating me. I didn't really mean to talk about gay stuff so much today, but where there was a kind of joke, so a reaction series of like real lesbians mm-hmm. watching lesbians in porn. Uh-huh. And it was just like, so you don't actually see the porn. But you'll uh-huh. just like, so like women will set up the camera and mm-hmm. then they'll just film themselves watching like, okay, all right, wait, what? Wait, why is she wearing heels naked? Wait, why is she having sex? Why is she getting fucked by the high heel? And it was just like,
yeah, that's pretty fun.
I mean, yeah, that was funny. But I haven't watched any reaction videos to like stuff I'm really geared into. I try not to. I kind of like my thing with movies is I try to be as untainted as possible. Mm-hmm. Like I want to go in with a clean slate.
With Star Wars, I don't believe that's possible.
Oh, definitely not. You guys are like, you guys have been trained well to know when to expect the stuff,
right.
Want to be spoon-fed, and then like continually then buy the toys.
Yeah, that's why J.J. Abrams, I think, has been so successful, which is, you know, you can say that his first Star Wars movie, The Force Awakens, the one you saw, is in some ways like a remix of the original ones. It's yeah. like, here's everything you like about the original Star Wars again. And then The Last Jedi, which a lot of people don't like, I feel like that film is very unique and actually does a lot of interesting things, which bothered a lot of people. And this one, I think, is going to close it all with all those, you know, J.J. Abrams knows how to tickle in all the right ways.
Yeah, he's doing what he's expected to do.
He's almost like, he's like a master storyteller without being a good artist. If that makes any sense.
That's fascinating.
He's great at making blockbuster movies.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong on this.
Yeah.
So is it sort of like how Zack Snyder is perfect at nailing down aesthetic, but horrible at everything else?
No, because I don't think there's anything JJ's horrible at.
Okay.
Because I think he doesn't write his movies, really, but I think he knows a good script when he sees it.
Yeah.
His movies tend to... You know what it's like? You ever like... Okay. You ever go to like Applebee's? And like,
sure.
You know, it's not good food, but it's got a lot of sugar in it. It's got a lot of fat in it. It's got a lot of salt in it. And it just, it hits you in all the right places in your mouth. And you're like, this is so enjoyable. That's what J.J. Abrams is like.
Okay.
He's like the Applebee's of filmmakers. You see what I'm saying?
Because
sometimes,
I
don't you want to go to Applebee's?
No.
You never want to go to Applebee's?
No.
I remember you and me used to, when I ate meat, you and me used to go to a Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah.
Wasn't that good?
Even though we knew it wasn't.
Right, exactly.
But it was still, yeah, you're
right. It's
not
a 4-star restaurant, but it's like you knew what you were going to get. You were going to get chicken wings and
sauce,
you know,
and like yeah, a side.
That's what J.J. Abrams is as a filmmaker. And it sounds like I'm mocking him, but I'm not. I think that's exactly, I mean, it's the exact opposite of Martin Scorsese, but I think it's exactly, you know, I think exactly what Star Wars needed.
Yeah, it works for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually don't see that as necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Scorsese does.
And now Star Wars literally is theme park. It literally
now
is one.
It's a theme park
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and I'm counting the moments till I can go.
I really can't wait to listen to your theme park episodes. It's exciting.
I think I might need a minute when I walk in there. I think I might be like, hold on, I need a minute.
Yeah, brace yourself.
I might like...
Maybe you should bring smelling salts with you. So, like, in case you faint, your friend can just, like, whiff them under your nose to wake you up.
I've had people, friends that have gone have told me, like, it really feels like you're in Star Wars. Like, the aesthetic is so, you're in it. And it's like, wow, it's like, and, you know, Disney is great at these mind fucks of, like, they use perspective and they make it so you can't see anything that doesn't fit in the land. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you're in Star Wars land, everywhere you look is Star Wars. It's like you're in Star Wars.
Right.
And I think I might need a minute.
Yeah.
Like, when I see the Millennium Falcon, I might be like, hold on. I need a minute. So, I think, you know, I think it's going to happen.
I mean, they're the Dream Factory.
Certainly are. Well, Nadia, we've learned a lot. It's very late. We got to end this. But thank you so much. This is... been a real treat. I was happy to have you back.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you.
Nadia Cater, you are an uncut gem. This is the Pop Culture Man Children PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. We end every episode by quoting the great Animal from Electric Mayhem.
Go bye-bye.